This is Jazz of Enchantment, a radio series spotlighting just some of the fine jazz players with ties to New Mexico. I'm Paul Ingalls. Bassist Matt Brewer, who spent most of his youth in Albuquerque, New Mexico, is now, at only the age of 23, an established player in New York City. His many gigs include touring and recording as a member of the Greg Osby Four, backing the talented saxophonist Greg Osby. In this series, we've heard some musicians talk about getting into jazz at very young ages, but it seems like Matt Brewer, who talked with Roy Durfee, might have them all beat.
When I was still in the womb, my parents would put headphones on my mother's stomach and play albums like A Love Supreme and also classical music like Debussy. And they say I had a special affinity for Coltrane. That whenever they played Coltrane, they said I would kick.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of true to this day. He's still pretty much one of my favorite musicians of all time.
I know your mother, Chris, is a big music fan and supporter. Was your dad a musician?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a trombone player.
Is your dad
player.
A musician?
Yeah, he is. He plays jazz trombone, and he runs the music program at Aquinas College in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He used to read bedtime stories to me, but they weren't typical. Like, he would read, you know, bass method books, you know, like how to build bass lines. You know, I remember getting, you know, him reading those to me while I was in bed as a, you know, 10 or 11 year old.
Did you bring any of your own composed work
I did.
Along for us to listen to?
Yeah, it's a tune of mine called Lunar Incandescence, and it starts with a somewhat lengthy bass intro, 2.5 minute bass intro or something. It moves into a short vamp, you know, just like kind of obligato bass line, doubled with a piano, and then fairly simple melody. Then it moves into a section where it gets kind of minimalist. I'd been listening to a lot of Steve Reich, which is where the Steve Reich influence comes in, where the melody is just focusing on one interval for four measure phrases, and it kind of repeats. It repeats and repeats and repeats, but things slowly change about it, much like minimalist music. You know, there's something that repeats, but something underneath it is changing, and by the end, you know, it sounds like something totally different than what it started.
Tell me something about the distance between Albuquerque and New York. How did you bridge that distance so readily?
Geez. Well, I guess it started with my move from Albuquerque to the Interlochen Arts Academy, which is a boarding arts high school. You know, they have music and drama and dance and creative writing. And I spent 3 years of high school, you know, basically living there. It's like college. You live in dorms, and a lot of kids that go to Interlochen and end up in New York. Like, all the top schools come to Interlochen to scout for students. You know, Juilliard sends representatives, and, you know, Manhattan School of Music. So kind of naturally led into being in New York.
From what I know of your history, that must have been an objective of yours anyhow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's always been a goal of mine. I mean, since the first time I went there when I was very young, I went to a convention. There was the International Association of Jazz Educators Convention.
Oh, right. Yeah.
In New York City. Oh, God, I don't remember how old I was, 12 or something. Ever since then, like, I would dream of New York. For a long time when I got back, I literally, like, dreamt about going there someday.
Wow.
I saw so much music, and it was overwhelming. Visiting it one time kind of really sort of made up my mind. That's where I wanted to be.
How was it that you chose the bass as your instrument?
Well, I went to the Interlaken summer camp. I had played drums a little bit, and I decided to take this class called Instrumental Exploration, where you go through all the instruments in the orchestra and you try them out. I really liked saxophone, cello, and bass. I was thinking, well, I really love classical music and I love jazz too. I want to be able to do both. And bass was sort of the most logical instrument. You know, every style of music needs some form of a bass player, so I'm glad I picked it.
So playing the bass then really is like a really kind of physical exercise. I mean, you don't look like a behemoth, but nonetheless, I would imagine you have a good deal of strength in your forearms and hands and.
It's terribly physical. I mean, every day I strive to do this every day. I set the metronome, you know, at a certain tempo, and then work on just producing the loudest sound possible. Just working on strength, and you know, if I don't do it every day, I feel it. You know, it's like working out or running or something. You know, if you miss a week of running, the next time you go out to the track, you just don't feel yourself. You know, and the bass is so physically demanding. It's just, I mean, it's so large. Like just to deal with something that big and feel comfortable, and you know, it takes quite a lot.
Okay, and then you brought along a track, a Miles Davis track called Nardis. What was the inspiration for that?
Well, I actually came from another radio interview that I did in Michigan.
Oh, you get to do a lot of these, do you?
Not too much, actually. I get to do a few, but I had my bass with me then, and I didn't know they were going to do this, but they asked me to play a solo bass piece, which is not something I really do typically. But that tune works really well on the bass because it's an E, and there are a lot of open strings that you can utilize, and I've always liked the melody.
Solo take on Nardis by Miles Davis. From both his Interlaken education and his parents' broad appreciation of music, Matt's musical influences are many and varied.
Ravel, Maurice Ravel, Bach, probably one of my ultimate favorite musicians ever. She's a jillion classical composers, Bartok and Stravinsky. Wayne Shorter, another man, he's a huge inspiration for me. And Paul Chambers, Oscar Pettiford, and Ray Brown, you know, to name some bass players as well.
I noticed another little interview bit of yours in which you said that you'd love to be the bass player in the Keith Jarrett Trio.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Keith has always been one of my favorite piano players. He has a beautiful sound, which a lot of piano players seem to neglect, you know, really working on just getting a touch of the piano. I don't know if that comes from studying classical music. I know he studied a lot as a young child. You know, he was classical piano virtuoso. But he's one of my idols, as is Jack DeJohnette.
You have a lot of time to listen to music in New York these days?
I do. I try and make time. I always feel that that's more important than practicing.
Really?
Yeah. If I don't listen to music, I have no basis to start from. It's like, what am I practicing towards if there's no goal in mind, you know? And if I'm listening, then I don't really know what that goal is, you know? So all of those things keep me inspired. You know, if I listen to Train, I'm pretty competitive with myself. So even if I hear a great recording like that, I'm like, geez, like, why can't I be like Train? Like, I want to learn. I want to know what he knew. You know, it makes me want to study that much more just listening, and, you know?
Well, how old are you now?
23.
Okay, so you got some time left, huh?
Yeah, I don't assume that I ever will accomplish that goal, but it keeps me motivated and practicing. So,
I believe you brought along a few recordings of players who are influences on,
mm-hmm.
On your music. Why don't you select a track by one of those folks you brought in and
okay.
say a couple words?
I would. Probably the most influential thing on there would be John Coltrane's Crescent. That I transcribed that solo. It's incredible to me. I transcribed it over a year ago, and I'm still looking at it like almost daily.
Wow.
For new wealth of information, pretty much all the time. It's not only is it very technically demanding, but I use it sort of as a classical musician would use an etude. You know, I'd sit down and try and play the solo. It's a little bit too hard for me, but I'm hoping, you know, that I can work it up. I'm just also trying to analyze it musically. It's just inexhaustible, basically. There's just so much information in it. I transcribe a solo, I try and learn it on my instrument from a technical perspective, but also I try and look at the theory behind it. This may be too technical, but if there's an E-flat minor chord and I notice he plays something that's in another key, you know, and instead of just taking that measure and learning the notes verbatim, I'll learn the concept. I'll be like, wow, he implied this harmony over this chord. Like, okay, I'm going to practice doing that in every key. You know, not the notes, but the concept, you know, if that makes any sense.
You brought in music by John Patitucci, I believe,
mm-hmm.
Also.
Mm-hmm. has incredible facility, but on that particular recording, he seems to kind of leave the technical side of his playing and really focuses on melodicism and is very lyrical. And that particular track is one solo that was really inspiring to me.
What's the name of that track?
I believe it's Valentine. It has Brad Meldow's playing piano and Brian Blades on drums.
And there was a third influence.
A Dave Holland track.
There we go, Dave Holland. That was someone I was going to get to eventually, so.
Mm-hmm. But actually, the most inspirational thing about that track for me is Steve Coleman. his solo on that track, I transcribed that as well, is incredible. It's been a big influence on me as well. Man.
Which album and which track is that?
It's an album called Extensions, which was done in the 80s.
Yeah.
And the track is called Processional.
You actually mentioned food as one of the inspirations
totally.
and influences on your music, and you also mentioned nature and the great outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't actually heard too many musicians talk like that. You want to elaborate a little bit?
Sure. I don't know, anything that is beautiful to me somehow comes out in my music. I think, you know, anything that is inspiring to me, like if I see a great film, for instance. If there's an actor that I really admire, it, for some reason, makes me want to practice. I think, like, geez, man, Johnny Depp was great in that film. I need to practice. You know, I don't know why that is. But it's the same thing with nature for me. I mean, being in New Mexico, it's great to be home because I love being in the surroundings. And I don't particularly enjoy the lifestyle in Manhattan. It's really great to be out here. But I mean, just being around mountains, it's the same thing. It's very inspiring for me to see all these things that nature created. You know, it inspires me to hopefully create something, you know, some, like, humble presentation of creation, you know, mm-hmm. music of some kind. You know.
Well, what is it that you hope to achieve in your own personal music?
Well, I guess some of the things I'd like to achieve as a bass player, just breaking some of the barriers of the instrument. It's a really difficult instrument to play fluently because you just have this long fingerboard with no frets, and just finding where the notes are is difficult enough, you know, let alone playing them in tune, and then let alone playing ideas that are actually interesting. You know, it's a lot easier for saxophone players to, you know, they just press down a key and basically the note comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And,
those lucky saxophone
yeah.
players, you know.
And piano players have it even easier as far as, you know, I mean, they have other issues, of course, those instruments have things to deal with, but I'd like it to be like that on the bass for me, like, just have absolute clarity and, you know, accuracy and also musicality, because I feel a lot of bass players seem limited by the bass itself and so can't express themselves fully musically, you know.
How about recording possibilities?
I would love to. I'm not recording with my group anytime soon, but I should be recording with Gonzalo and Tane coming up in December.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for the Blue, again, the Blue Note label.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're really cooking, aren't you?
Well, I'm doing my best.
Yeah, yeah. And you seem so, like, composed and mellow and kind of humble about it. I mean, you know, I mean, basically, you know, most guys would be just getting out of school about now wondering what to do next, you know, and you're rolling right along.
Yeah, I don't know how it happened. I mean, I feel
well, I was
really
going to ask you that. How did it happen?
Well, I guess, I mean, I went to Juilliard after I went to high school, And I stayed there for a couple of years. And while in New York, I met drummer Rodney Green. And we've since played together a lot. And he's become one of my most favorite drummers to play with. He introduced me to Greg. He had a gig at the old club CBGB's.
Okay.
And he knew Greg was looking for a bass player, so Rodney hired me and Greg so that we could meet. And I was really nervous. I thought I played terribly on that gig, too. I was really embarrassed. But after the show, Greg gave me his card, and he told me to give him a call, and he said he had some tours coming up. And so I was thrilled. And after that, we traveled a lot. We went to Europe very often, and it started conflicting with school. So I ended up leaving, actually. To be doing what I'm doing.
So was that in any way a tough decision?
Not particularly. I'd always gone to school with the hope that that would happen anyway.
That you wouldn't have to finish.
Yeah. That I hoped, and I think everybody hopes, that it will lead them into their professional career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And an opportunity like that, I felt would be not a good idea to pass up.
We were thinking about going out with a track of your choice from the Channel 3 Greg Osby trio recording.
Sure. I guess the track maybe Vertical Hold. That's a good one.
And what's good about it?
I like the interaction between everyone on that tune. There are some things that Greg and I randomly just hit exactly together in his solo. And there's some great interplay. Which
so you mean there's actually accidents involved in jazz?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could call it that. It's full of accidents. hopefully positive ones. But in that case, it was positive for me. There were some moments where Greg and I ended up playing exactly the same rhythm together.
Bassist Matt Brewer backing sax man Greg Osby and climbing the ladder of jazz respectability at the tender age of 23. He talked with Roy Durfee, and you can hear much more from Matt and all the players in our series online at newmexicojazz.org. There are also remarkable photographs at that site, newmexicojazz.org. Our staff includes Nola Daves-Moses, Carol Boss, and Genevieve Russell. Support from the City of Albuquerque's Urban Enhancement Trust Fund, the New Mexico Humanities Council, KUNM, and Good Radio Shows Incorporated. I'm Paul Ingalls.